Okay, Erev Tov, I've been doing this every year for about 35 years now. And every year it's a little bit different, and I think it's a little bit different because things change, the world changes, and it's a little bit different because I change, and my attitude changes. So you might, I'm saying this, if you were here last year and the year before, might be a bit different. Let me say this, that it seems to me, just as an introduction, that shiurim on preparing for Pesach, cleaning for Pesach, kashering for Pesach, chopping for Pesach, they sort of like divide into two. There are some, you listen online or if you go on to shiurim, some are very, very machmir. It's chametz, and you got to be very, very careful. And even a drop, and people have been asking me, I have a lot of the email questions that came in, literally asking about microscopic pieces of chametz. And I'm not knocking it because yesh b'zeh mashu, just literally the dust of chametz, can you cook in the same kitchen? Do you have to wait a couple of hours? And there are those shiurim that are very, very machmer in these kind of things. And then there's a whole other genre of shiurim which are very, very chilled. Just relax, take it easy. You don't really enjoy the Seder. Make sure you come in. Make sure you come into the Seder rested. You don't want to be, completely exhausted, sleeping through the Seder. What's the point of that? And if you learn the halacha, it's not really so stringent anyway. A lot of it is what we make. So there's two kinds of shiurim out there. And being a bit schizophrenic, I go back and forth, more leaning, I would say, to the chilled side of it, because my Rebbe was very relaxed about this. He was Rav Sheinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, very machmer on everything, very machmer everywhere, tallis and tefillin all day, and never spoke Lashon Hara. It was very machmer on everything. But somehow or another, he just, when it came to Pesach preparations, he made it very easy. I want to explain that they're really both sides of the coin are true. Because on the one hand, if you learn halacha carefully, and I'm going to describe that to you, exactly the technical halacha, I want this to be somewhat of a high-level shiur tonight so we understand the real klolim of Hilchos Pesach. If you learn the halacha, it is pretty chilled out. I mean, you have to remember that in the olden days, they didn't have such, big houses that we have. Even here in Israel, we have pretty big apartments. We have sophisticated appliances. We have all kinds of food things that you buy. Life is convenient but complicated in the sense that, nobody was koshering out microwaves, 100 years ago. And how do you do that? So what was cleaning for Pesach? Cleaning for Pesach was two things. Cleaning for Pesach was sweeping out the house. What else are you going to do? There wasn't that much furniture to scrub. And kashering, which we don't do that much, kashering pots, kashering what you can kosher, what you can't kosher, was all about fire and boiling water. That was pretty much what was going on. But it was relatively easy to do if you live in a one-room house. And if you come from that world, even if you'll expand it to our world, it's not something necessarily to go crazy about. And that's for the team which talks about stay relaxed. There's another whole genre of Hilchos Pesach, which I become more and more sensitive to as I get a little older, and that is, let's call it the Kabbalistic aspect of it. Because from a Kabbalistic point of view, it's very, very machmir. There's the Arizal who tells us that anybody who there isn't even a drop of chametz in your house on Pesach, and you're careful about it, and you haven't ingested even a drop of chametz on Pesach, even by accident, so will be guaranteed that you'll never do an aveira the whole year long. That's if you don't want to do aveiras, that's a pretty good reason to be machmir. And he speaks about speaks a lot about what happens in your house is what happens in your heart. So the tashbisu, getting rid of chametz, and we're going to learn about how getting rid of it physically, burning it, cleaning it out, even psychologically getting rid of it, right? Tashbisu, you do bitul chametz, you say kol chamira v'chamia, bitul chametz, any chametz that I own, I'm disowning. That's a very, according to the Ari, that's has to happen in like everything in the Ari's world, it has to happen to the world of Gashmias, and it has to happen to the world of Ruchnias too. What it means is, according to the Ari, the Tashbisu, you know, and it was very real for the Jewish people, because when we went out of Egypt, not only was there this kind of random mitzvah, don't have any chametz in your house, right there, Pesach Mitzrayim, right? But it was also leaving Egypt, leaving the Gashmius of Egypt. That was the bread basket of the world. That's where bread was invented. As bread as we know it was invented in Egypt. But it wasn't just the bread. It was the technology of the bread. You know, in the Torah it says two things. He says you're not allowed to have bread called chametz, the whole se'or. What is se'or? Se'or is sourdough. Se'or, sour, same word. Se'or is sourdough. So what is sourdough? Sourdough is that the Egyptians figured out that you can take a piece of dough from last month or last year and throw it into a big, gigantic batter of dough, and the whole thing will rise. So that's sourdough. So that's not, it's not even something which is edible. It's called se'or lo yimatzei v'aseichem. We don't talk about se'or that much. We talk about chametz. The se'or, the chametz is the chametz. The se'or represents the technology of creating chametz. And that was something that Egypt excelled at. So what the Ari tells us is we left Egypt. It means going out into the desert and leaving all that behind. So, and that's the, not just the symbolism, but the ruchnius of chametz and of Pesach. So it means, you know, it, when you think about it, it's much harder to do that than it is to vacuum. It's a difficult job, because what we're talking about when tashbisu se'or b'baseichem, if a person is really letting go of the things that are important to them in life, yet they're holding them back. How many people don't move to Israel because of silly things, I think, that are holding them back? How many people don't get ahead in life? How many people don't have shalom bias because of silly things? So those silly things are hard to let go of. They're not so silly, you know. It's hard to go. So, you know, you come into Pesach and you say, am I really, really letting go? Am I really surrendering to that metzius? Am I really going to dedicate myself to the Ratzon Hashem? It's a big deal. So that's where the Ari is coming from. And he says, be very, very, very machmir. So, you know, here we have two sides of it. You really have the halachic side, and you have the Kabbalistic side of it, which is much more machmir. And I would even, I would like to posit that, you know, women, generally speaking, there's always been this debate between men and women. You can document this through the generations. Men are much less machmir in Pesach than women. You know, everybody knows the famous story about Rav Chaim Brisker that came to his house, and he sees his wife is the Rebbetzin Brisker is Rebbetzin Soloveitchik is scrubbing the sidewalk in front of the house, and he told her, "You're being silly. You don't have to do that. What are you doing?" And she said, "If I'd leave it to you, we'd be eating chametz on Pesach." You know, there's a lot of truth to that. Now you could simply explain that, okay, Rav Chaim Brisker knew all the halachas and she didn't. It's I believe it's deeper than that. I believe that there's the halachas of chametz, and there's the mesorah. And women, because the way society was set up, always had a stronger sense of mesorah than men had. Women were in the kitchen, they were with their mothers, there was a stronger mesorah with women, and this mesorah was largely based in Kabbalah. Now, if somebody comes in and doesn't have not a mesorah, not a halacha, so we have to sort of start from scratch and get a balance here. But it makes sense to me that automatically, you know, women will often say to me, but that's not what I saw at home. I didn't see anybody. Just 45 minutes ago, had a conversation just to skip all the way to the end, and then I'll get to the beginning. But somebody was saying that their Rav said that once you can make your kitchen Pesachtik and have your Pesach pots and everything, and cook kidneys in it, like rice, in your Pesach pots. Because even though we don't eat rice on Pesach, Ashkenazim don't eat rice on Pesach, But rice is not really chametz, said this Rav. So if it's not really chametz, you just a minhag not to eat it on Pesach. So cook it into your, right? So my wife says, no, Mavito. Like, who would do that? Who would do it? So this woman said, this was a rebbetzin, the daughter of a rebbetzin, the daughter of a rebbetzin. Like, shavu shemayim, who's going to cook rice? Who's going to let the Pesach pot even near the rice? But you want to know something? This Rav is 100% correct. 100% correct. There is no question in my mind that it is permitted to cook kidneys the day before Pesach, or a week before Pesach, or an hour before Pesach, in your Pesach pas. A question that it's mutter. And if you want to do it, do it. Do it for kids. But if you have a masorah, you'll never do it. You'll never do it. If you have a masorah, you'll never.
Hmm?
Of course. We're talking about stuff that's svardim eat. In other words, you go to the store, and buy the rice that the svardim eat. It's under Machpud Hashgacha, 100%, but it's kosher is kosher. So we're going to get to the kidneys, but I'm just giving you an illustration of the difference between the Mesorah and the Halacha. Well, that one, by the way, that one even offended me.
Watch it, because someone's going to say, at Rabbi Hagerschmier, he said that you can eat rice on Pesach.
As long as you're here, I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it anymore.
So I'm just
going to
get this.
I won't say anything more. Okay, so let's begin. Let's understand. Here's what I want to do. I want to end in about 10 to 10. That's the first thing I want to do. And I want to state some very basic, fundamental halachas and principles of Hilchos Pesach. And then I want to do a little interactive workshop. And I'm going to read to you all of the questions, about 20 of them, that I received by email, or as many as we get to. And you'll be able to paskin by the end of this, you should be able to paskin. Otherwise, I didn't do my job. Okay. Chametz, arch enemy number one, chametz. what is chametz? What does it mean? So chametz, the Torah itself explains, has to come from one of the famous five grains in the Torah, from wheat, barley, spelt, oats, and rye. Wheat is something that most bread is made out of. Barley we're familiar with. In our house we put it in the cholent. Spelt bread has become popular. Oats, everybody knows what oats are, oatmeal. And rye, I'm not sure what it looks like. I know rye bread, but I don't know what that. So, but those are the five grains of the Torah. Those five grains equal bread, they equal chametz, they equal matzah. It means that if you make matzah out of some other grain, out of quinoa, you make matzah out of something other than one of these five grains, it's not matzah, because matzah has to be bread, just not risen, not leavened bread. So if something looks like chametz, acts like chametz, tastes like chametz, but it's not made out of one of these five grains, it is not chametz. So in order for something to qualify as chametz, it has to be made out of one of these five grains. A, also needs to be clarified that the grains themselves are not chametz. Wheat is not chametz. Matzah is made out of wheat. It's one of these grains that come inappropriately for Pesach in contact with water for 18 minutes. So if you'll take a piece of wheat, just chop it off the plant, take a piece of wheat, eat it on Pesach, wonderful. There's nothing wrong with doing that. If you'll take it and put it in contact with water for 18 minutes, now 18 minutes is also another gewalt, even a second if it touches water. But the halacha, I'm talking about the halacha. The halacha is 18 minutes, it comes in contact, then it starts to swell and it starts to rise. And that's what chametz is. So any of these wheat, spelt, barley, oats, rye, any of those that come in contact with water, it doesn't have to be water. It could be any one of a number of liquids. The abbreviation is Yad Shochat Dam, Yayin Dam. But let's talk about water, because that's the most common of the fruit juice. That becomes chametz, and that becomes matzah. So that's our definition. Our definition is one of the five grains, 18 minutes in water. This chametz has its usher to eat, like soichal kol chametz, it's usur to derive any benefit from it. Which means that, let's say you're using it and as a mishcha, you know, you're spreading it as an ointment onto your hands, or you're using it as makeup, or you're using it, or you have any kind of benefit, financial benefit, usur. This we derive from the fact that it says that you can't eat chametz not once, not twice, but three times. Also, you're not allowed to own it. That's midaraisa from the Torah. You're not allowed to own the chametz. Owning means that, which is why we have the forms and we sell whatever's left over to a non-Jew. But owning it doesn't only mean owning it in your house that you have a bottle of scotch in your, which is a wheat derivative, in your cabinet. But owning means that you own a factory in Hawaii that's making chametz. Not allowed to own that. So what we need to talk about, maybe not tonight, but if somebody has this issue, you have to talk about stocks. If you have stocks in a company, if you have partnership in a company, those are all very, very important questions because you're not allowed to own the chametz. So we have, you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to derive benefit from it, and you're not allowed to have it in your house. Those three, you're not allowed to own it. Those are the, you are allowed to have it in your house. I mean, you could sell it to a guy and you could have it in your house, but you're not allowed to own it. Those are the three things that are usur, and all of those three things are only usur, A, if it's real chametz, as I just described, and B, how much? The answer is a kazayas. A kazayas, as you know, means like an olive size. Big question as to how big an olive was, how big it used to be. I don't know what happened to olives over the years, but olive apparently was bigger than an olive. So we were just talking. If you're talking about an olive, a kazayas, good to know. I think we just figured out that a matzah like this, which is like a standard British matzah, so this probably has three kazayasim in it. Because a kazayas is, or two or three, I'm not sure, you have to actually weigh it. But a kazayas is approximately 27. Why do I say 27 gram? Why, approximately? Because some say it's 28, some say it's 31. But the mainstream opinion is 27 gram. So that means that if you want to do the mitzvah matzah, you have to eat a kazayas. The mitzvah matzah is about a third of this. To do the aveira of chametz, you have to have a kazayas. That's quite a lot. It's not a piece of dust. It's not even an olive's worth. It's not a little. It's not even a pretzel. It's a lot. You're talking about a lot of chametz. More probably than what you're looking for when you're scrubbing the counter, correct? I mean, like a piece of bread like that, that's already a big piece of bread. But that's it's and I want to talk about all these three things: eating it, deriving benefit from it, and owning it. And all of this is going to come to what we need to do in our own homes and in our own lives. And maybe if we're zocha in our own hearts, in the next couple of weeks. There's an important difference between the kitchen and the rest of the house. A distinction which is not made enough in halacha. And the difference is this, that the Rabbanan, not the Torah, but the Rabbanan of the Gemara, came along and said that since if you eat a kazayas of chametz, you're chayv kares, God forbid, kares is bad. That means kares is bad. Kares means you've one kazayas of chametz. All it takes to forfeit your portion in the world to come. So the Rabbanan said, let's stay away from the kazayas, and let's move on to a mashahu, even a drop of chametz. A drop of chametz, the Gemara explains, doesn't mean a microscopic drop, but it means something that you can, enough that you can taste. Even a little bit of chametz. So we have here a doraisa, kares of a kazayas, and a mashahu chametz, which is probably midrabanan. That's the mashahu, you're not allowed, the mashahu, everyone good with that term? A mashahu means a drop. Mashahu. A mashu chametz is forbidden to eat. It's not forbidden to own. And that's why I say there's a difference between the kitchen and the bedroom. Because in the kitchen, where you're cooking and you're preparing food, and it's all about food and eating, so there, we want to make sure that even a mashihu, even a drop of chametz, doesn't get into my soup. Even a mashu. And that's why we're scrubbing the counters and lining the shelves. You don't want to have a mashu. When it comes to the rest of the house, it's not so much an issue of you're not preparing the food. You're not going to cook in the bedroom. Most people are not going to do this in the garage. But what the issue there is, you're not allowed to own chametz. Owning chametz has to be a kazayas. In other words, the only place that the Rabbanan said that it's a mashahu and not a kazayas is by eating. So whenever it comes to eating, let's call kitchen things, any amount of chametz is too much chametz. When it comes to owning chametz, the Rabbanan never came along with this chumra and said, even a drop. They stuck with their idea, with the Torah's idea of a kazayas is usher, if there's a kazayas, so if you find, or came the Rabbanan, they added on there, when it comes to owning chametz, we're not going to say a mashahu, but we're going to say something which you would be enticed to eat. You with me? So it would be like this, that, again, let's make this distinction, very important distinction, that in the kitchen, when I say kitchen, I mean when it comes to food preparation, comes to eating, so even a drop is too much. When it comes to finding chametz, like, you know, you walk into you pull up one of the bedspreads and gevalt, here's a piece of chametz, there's a sandwich there. You didn't do anything wrong if it's not a kazayas. But if it's something that you might come to eat, it's edible, not a pretzel from 2 years ago, but something which is edible, so then the Rabbanan came along and they said, get rid of it. That Rabbanan, by the way, is why we do Bedikas Chametz on the night going into Pesach, on the night going into the 14th. We're not doing the Bedikas Chametz. It has nothing to do with eating. It has to do with owning. The Bedika is to make sure you don't own a kazayas of chametz, or you don't own enough chametz that you might want to eat. A little piece of chocolate, you might want to eat it. If it's old, if it's dirty, if it's chemicalized, if it has ritzpahs on it, you're not going to eat that. So then you're not over any aver. But is the distinction clear? Distinction between eating and finding. The bedika is for eating. The bedika is for owning. The kashering is about eating. So there's no Indian of kashering a bedroom, for instance, or kashering even a dining room table, unless there's some kind of a danger that the chametz is going to get into your food somehow. So this is an important distinction. Let's just test it for a moment. According to what I just said, do you have to check all your books for chametz? I have a few thousand books. Let's say only the ones you use. Okay, I have 5, 6. so how do you have to check it, or you don't have to check it? What do you think? Well, let's hear some logic. What's the point? So if it's a crumb that's going to fall into your food at the table, then it's a problem. To sit in your study and to read, it's not a problem because you're just owning it, right?
But it could get on your clothing, and then when you go to eat, it'll get on the table.
So the Rabbanan, we're talking about a kazayas. That's not going to happen with a kazayas.
No, with a crumb.
With a crumb. So the Rabbanan are not so worried about it. They're not worried about transferring this crumb from one place to the other. It's clear in Shulchan Aruch.
What is it about all this spin? There's all this crumb. There's like enough to add to
it. No, it has to be in one place where you can see it together. So the truth is, in terms of owning chametz, there's mamish no problem with all the svarim. So to do a bedikas chametz on your svarim is actually silly. I've seen somebody do it, but it's a silly thing. It has no... Nothing. No, there's no chumra there. There's nothing to do with bedikas chametz. The only chash, as you said, with the books, is that a crumb can get into my soup, and this can happen. You know, if you eat over your books, and then you open it up while you're learning. So then it can get into your soup. We can be worried about such a thing. How far do we have to worry about it? So here, Chazal tell us in Shulchan Aruch, direct. In other words, we're not worried about it in the air. We're not worried about it transferring. We're not worried about something. How do I know this? Because the Shulchan Aruch says something that you actually bring to the table, you should check for chametz. Not a bedikah with a candle, that's dangerous. But what you should do is you should make sure there's no chametz there if you're going to bring it to the table. There's two good chumras here, by the way. One good chumra is don't bring books to the table if you didn't check them. Because who's actually checking every book? You could sit there and you could do it. Did I do this when we first got married? I think so. When I was still religious.
I'm still religious. I just stopped because my husband told me
not to. Okay. It's not like a silly. But the good chumra, like the real pious thing to do, is b'chol, don't bring books to the table, even during the year. That's a good thing to do. Don't eat with svarim. The other thing to do is don't bring svarim to the table on Pesach. Just the Haggadah, because the crumbs in there are presumably matzah. It's not a problem. And the third thing to do, which is what I do actually, is the svarim that I know that I bring to the table, so those I just shake them out, make sure that there's no chametz in it. Which really, realistically, the svarim that I bring to the table, 20 svarim, 30 svarim. It's not thousands of svarim. So the idea there is it's all about the worry of a crumb getting into the food. It has nothing to do with bedikas chametz. Bedikas chametz has nothing to do with that whole side of the equation. Bedikas chametz has to do with what you're allowed to own and what you're not allowed to own. It is 100% mutter to own chametz crumbs inside of your books. You can put them there lechatchila. You can do it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
The mashin of chametz, that's so do a rice so you're chayav karis on a person that's
on a kazais.
And derabanan, you can't say you're chayav karis on a mashu, can't?
No, you're not chayav karis.
It's just you're over derabanan.
Over derabanan.
So we go crazy for this mashu. Like if a crumb falls in your soup, it's not.
If you eat it,
the whole thing's chametz. It's all derabanan.
That's derabanan.
Wow.
Okay. Which doesn't mean that you should be lax about it.
No, of course not. It's not what the Torah.
Right. Look, not, in this case, not listening to the Rabbanon, I'm not talking to the Rabbanon from now.
I'm still doing it
every day. No, but in this case, not listening to Rabbanon is being over derisa, because on this the Torah said, Lo sasur b'davar asher yagidu lecha. The Rabbanon are deciding, just like they're deciding what Rosh Chodesh is, they're deciding what Chavetz is. But you're not chayv karis. The good news is that if you accidentally ingested some chametz, you're not for whatever use the wrong ingredient, or you're not kind of close. Let me take the questions at the end because I want to make sure I cover. Is that okay? You'll remember. Okay, I feel bad. Go ahead.
If a crumb drops in the soup, so then the whole soup is chametz, right?
That's correct.
So that if you have the whole soup, is that having kazais then?
Since no.
The whole soup absorbs the flavor.
No. In other words, midoraisa. From the Torah, so that's lost. 1 in 60. According to the Chachamim, they told us that you're going to somehow, if you eat the whole soup, you're going to somehow for sure ingest a mashu, and then you're over an aver.
Even if you don't eat the whole pot.
Even if you don't eat the whole pot. Another famous story, a real story, about a which I presume was somewhat common in pre-war Europe, where somebody didn't have a lot of money and they took everything that they had, the chicken, their spices, everything, and made a big soup out of it. And that was their Seder, and that was the second Seder, and that was the Chol HaMoed, and that was it. It was all this big soup with everything in it. Right? And at the end of the whole thing, on Pesach night, she added some spice. She thought it was spice and realized it was chametz. So a mashahu chametz messed up everything for the whole yontif. And she went to the Rav that night and she said, I don't have anything to feed my family all Pesach. And the Rav said, right, mashahu chametz is aser. And then he thought, and I'll just share with you a technical point. The one everybody says this. There's one opinion, the opinion in the time of the Gaonim, that's like 11th century, one opinion of Rabbi Choy Gaon, like there was a Rabbi Sadia Gaon, Rabbi Choy Gaon. He says that it's not true, and it's batel b'rov. He disagrees with this whole thing, and he says that if it's batel b'shishim, it's gone. So the Rav had rachmanis on the lady. He said, look, if there's one opinion somewhere in history that says that I can be mekel, I'm going to be mekel for you, and you can use your soup, you can use your chicken, you can use everything. She went home and she ate it. The Rav had a dream that night, and Rav Achoy Gon came to him in a dream, and he said that I said this psak only for this woman. I said I never would do it myself, and I would never tell anyone to do it, but I knew, Rav Achoy Gon, that there's going to become a case somewhere in history, and this was the case. You had it, and that was what my psak was for. This Rav, Rav Chaim Ozer. Rav Chaim Ozer writes this in his Sefer. He tells the story as ever. He had a dream. Rav Achoy Gon came to him and says, the psak was for you. So this is holy stuff. This is holy stuff. Now, that's what I described, by the way, was just now everything having to do with eating chametz and everything having to do with owning chametz. I'm going to get to deriving benefit from chametz in a minute, but first, let's stick with the eating. There's this idea of kidneys. I'm going to go here with an Ashkenazi halacha, and it is a halacha, because even though we say kidneys is a minhag, it's a minhag that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So in Shulchan Aruch, you know, the way the Shulchan Aruch works is in every Shulchan Aruch, you should know this, there is the bold print, and then there's the lighter print. The bold print is the Shulchan Aruch, that's Rabbi Yosef Cairo. The finer print is the Ramah, Rav Moshe Iserlish. The Shulchan Aruch is the halacha for Sfardim. The Ramah is the halacha for Ashkenazim. It's as simple as that. The Sfardim go lechatzila like the Shulchan Aruch. In the Shulchan Aruch, it says very clearly the five types of grains are chametz, and nothing else is chametz. The Ramah says, but b'dinas senu, that in our medinos, and his medinos meant Poland and Lithuania and Romania and Czechoslovakia, so we are machmir on kidneys also. That's his language, kidneys. We're machmir on kidneys also. So what I'm saying now is only for Ashkenazim. You see Sfardim eating kidneys, they're doing fine. See Ashkenazim eating kidneys, doing something wrong. What are these kidneys? So first of all, why? There are certain grains that are so much like the five grains that it was very easy for people to get confused. Meaning you can grind it up and it looks just like flour. You know, I myself in our house, like sometimes my wife makes something with almond flour. I can't tell. It looks to me it's flour. It looks like, but you don't make a mazonas on it, right? Like this was a big kiddush to me that I eat now a lot of things that I don't make a mazonos, even though it's cake. So there are things that are grains, but they're not the five grains. And if they're not the five grains, but they're so similar to things that you can make chametz, and so the minhag became not to eat it. Maybe it was the minhag because people were making a mistake. Maybe it was, I don't know why the minhag is, I mean, we can imagine, but that was the minhag, and it's brought down in the Ramah. The earliest place that we know it from is the Ramah. Now, the thing about this is that they're listed. They're always, kidneys comes from the word katan. Katanchikles, little things like grain. There's a little katanim. But as opposed to an apple. It would seem that a potato could never be called kidneys, because the potato's big. Like, the thing with these kidneys is that they're listed in the Ramah. He goes on to say, this is his list, I'm reading you. They're beans, buckwheat, corn, fenugreek, lentils, millet, mustard, peas, poppy seeds, rapeseed, this is not my translation, it's translated, rice, sesame seeds, soybeans, sunflower seeds. Here you go. There's the whole list. Did you memorize it? That is kidneys. I'll read it for you again, but I just want you to understand something. There have been many things over the generation that have come from foreign countries, because now the way the shipping works and that we have that we didn't have 100 years ago. And it would make sense to make them into kidneys. Quinoa is the obvious example that everybody always talks to talk about. Quinoa is a very, just like millet, just like buckwheat. What's the difference? But it's not on the list. And the Igrish Moshe, Moshe Feinstein, Tzatzel, tells us, and this is the halacha that we must go by, because we have to be consistent with, at least here, this base medrash, we go with the Chumras of Ramosha and the Kulas of Ramosha, unless Rav Scheinberg argues. That's the way, that's my halachas. And he tells us very clearly that the list is the list. And if it's not on the list, because we didn't even know such a thing as quinoa existed in Europe, if it's not on the list because potatoes only started being used a couple hundred years ago, they're not old at all, potatoes. You know, five potatoes of the Gemara. No, there's no potatoes. No, tapuchei atam is not even a word for a potato in the Gemara. So it's not on the list. So, like, years ago, the Badats, the Eda Charedis, wanted to say that, look, if you take potatoes and you make potato flour from it, so the potato flour looks just like regular flour, and that should be kidneys too. That was a very short-lived chumra. It lasted about 10 years. And then all the poskim came out against the Badats, specifically Rav Landau became a big campaign against the Badats, and even the Badats withdrew that chumra. There's still some diehards.
Like flour.
What?
It doesn't feel like flour.
Doesn't feel like flour? On your tongue, you mean?
Yeah,
right. But you make cake, you know? You can make cake out of it. Yeah. That's the thing. So to me, that's what it means. You know, I once heard from somebody that Rav Moshe, talking about Rav Moshe Feinstein, he didn't speak English really very well, Rav Moshe Feinstein. So somebody called him during the year. Somebody called him on the phone and asked him, "What bracha do you make on pretzels?" And he covered up the mouthpiece and he said to his rebbetzin, he says, "Blessed us, pretzel." He didn't know. So she said, "It's a kind of mezonos." So he said, "Mezonos." So the rabbinic mind says a pretzel is a mezonos. So potato starch or potato flour, I think there's a difference between potato starch and potato flour, would seem that it could be one of the kidneys, but it's not. Because, simply says Ramosha, it's not on the list. The list, I'll read to you again, is... Tell me if you even know what all these things are. Beans, we know what beans are. Buckwheat, kasha. Buckwheat is kasha. Corn. Now, this is a big kiddush, by the way, because, first of all, corn wasn't so eaten in the time of the Ramah. It's mostly an animal food. Corn just became, when they started harvesting it more in America, the corn became the thing they eat. But they had corn. They had corn, and they did eat corn. They cooked it for a long time, and they ate the corn. Today, by the way, this kidney is called corn, is in everything. Because fructose and sweetening comes from corn, and it's all kidneys. There's almost not a product, I look for sugar these days, there's almost not a product that doesn't have corn syrup, corn fructose, corn this, corn that. So that's all not kosher for Ashkenazim. So that's why on so many cans in the supermarket, they'll say, kosher l'Pesach la'ochle kidneys. And it's mostly that corn, that's the big one. So corn, fenugreek is chilba. And now everybody knows what it is. Okay. Lentils. That's what Yaakov made for Esav. Millet. What's millet?
It's a very similar kasha.
Mm-hmm. Like kasha. my midhag is whatever. I don't know what it is. I say it's kasha. Okay. Mustard, which is made out of mustard seeds. Peas. You know, I actually have pea flour. It's like a very nutritious thing. Pea flour looks just like flour.
They have pea butter also.
Pea butter. So anything with peas. Well, let's get to the anything in a minute. Poppy seeds. You can grind it up. Poppy seeds. Poppy seeds looks like, to me, looks like chia seeds. But chia seeds are not on this list. Chia seeds are not on this list. Because it's also kind of It's a new thing for the Ashkenazim.
So chia seeds could be kosher Pesach if you found them.
Which ones?
Chia seeds could be hechsher.
You have to find with the hechsher. The problem, the hard part is finding with the hechsher and making sure that they weren't mixed with anything. You know, all kinds of side issues, technical issues. But like be'etzem, if you have your own shia tree, rape seed. I don't know if anybody's seen rape seed. Not grape seed. Rape seed. Oh, so canola. Canola is rapeseed. Canola oil is rapeseed oil. The difference is that rapeseed, incidentally, is very unhealthy. I don't want to give a shear on health. Not grape. Rapeseed is a very unhealthy seed, and it's a very unhealthy oil. And what the Canadians did, canola, Canadian oil, what the Canadians did is during the war, when they had to produce a lot of oils, they took rapeseed, which was very, very cheap, and very easy to make oil out of, it just kills you. And they figured out how to take a couple of the terrible nutrients out of it, and that's what canola oil is. So canola oil is a healthier version of rapeseed oil, but in that sense, it would be kidneyous from at this point if you're actually eating.
Why is canola healthier?
Why is it healthier? They took out two nutrients. Which were semi-poisonous, which kills rats. They were able to take it out chemically with technology.
Now they sell rapeseed oil, they consider it very healthy.
Yeah.
Grape seed oil is healthy. It's not healthy. Google it. It's not healthy. Yeah, it's not healthy. I'm telling you, it's not healthy. Palm oil is also not healthy.
No,
canola oil is rapeseed oil. Canola oil is rapeseed oil, but it's healthier. That's why. So most people have turned from rapeseed oil. It's a silly thing to that people said, well, before canola oil is already artificial because they've taken out nutrients. That's what you mean by synthesized. They've treated it. So rapeseed oil is more natural, but they took out the bad stuff out of the rapeseed oil, not the good stuff. I'll get to oil in a second. Soybeans. See, again, I want to point out, I don't know how many of us have soybeans in our house.
I have in the freezer.
You have soybeans?
It's very bad.
Okay.
I'm
glad you're all here.
I get rid of all
It's kidneys. It's kidneys. It's kidneys. It's kidneys. There's no isser in owning any of these things. Nothing. No isser in owning it. You can store it in your books. there's no isser in owning kidneys. The only isser is in owning chametz. Nobody ever came up with an isser of owning kidneys. You're allowed to own it. You don't have to sell it. People sell to me. Tell me I don't sell chametz. I only sell my kidneys. They say, go away. I don't buy kidneys. I don't do kidneys. We don't deal with kidneys. Kidneys has nothing to sell. There's no reason. Only reason to sell kidneys is if it's not kosher lepesach and it might have stuff mixed into it. But kidneys as a concept. Sunflower seeds, and that's the list.
Wait, what about sesame seeds?
Sesame seeds are not on the list.
I said
sesame seeds. Let me read it again. I apologize. Beans, buckwheat, corn, fenugreek, lentils, millet, mustard, peas, poppy seeds, I said, rapeseed, rice, sesame seeds, I apologize, soybeans, sunflower seeds. Correct.
What about rice?
Rice. I said rice. All of those things are kidneys. Now, these things are kidneys. However,
string beans are
beans. They're beans. I want to say two things about this. One, something that everybody talks about, and one, something that nobody talks about. What everybody talks about is that most opinions say that the minhag of kidneys is strictly kidneys, as opposed to kidneys extract or oil that comes from a kidneys, or what's called in halacha lashon hayotze minha kidneys. So, like oil. So canola, let's say, which is rapeseed oil, can be kidneys, the actual rapeseeds, but rapeseed oil, most poskim, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, says that it's mutter l'chatchila. If you want to not use oil that comes from kidneys, so then you're stuck with walnut oil. There's a few oils, a palm oil, olive oil. Olive oil is good. Cottonseed oil is bad.
Cottonseed oil is the whole story with here they consider it kidney oils, but that's like a whole...
Canola oil more. I mean, the big tumult in the street here is canola oil.
I thought it was the cottonseed. That's why they don't like also, the American products that have cottonseed.
Right, but that's a different issue than what we're talking about because of the machinery. Cottonseed oil is
saying,
different.
When you're saying canola oil, it's hayotzim min
hakidneis. It's hayotzim min hakidneis, and as far as I'm concerned, you can use it. If you're uncomfortable with it because it's Pesach, so be uncomfortable. I mean, you know, that's up to you. I'm not
saying it's mutter.
It's mutter. It's mutter according to the Igros Moshe. It's mutter. Yotzim and Akidneis is mutter, and that's why you find canola oil with the holiest hechsherim on it. It's not that they're rishoyim or something. So peanuts in general, is that Akidneis? What is that?
It wasn't on the list.
It's not on the list. So Ramosha Feinstein says, since it's not on the list, peanuts are not kidneys. And peanut oil, kal vachomer. Now, most places don't eat kidneys. It's considered a legume. But it's Ramosha says mutter. Ramosha says mutter.
So what about something like corn syrup? Is that considered a derivative?
Okay, so corn syrup is a little bit different. And I'll tell you why. Because that's not a derivative. I'm not sure exactly what the difference. Lachorah could be the same thing. But somehow or another, they feel that that's using the corn. I don't know why the post can make a distinction in corn.
Vanilla extract.
Vanilla is a bean. Beans are oster. I want to tell you something else, though. That's like everybody tells that. I'll tell you a different chiddush that I said to my son in my son who wrote that beautiful Haggadah, which you can purchase after this year. I told him this chiddush, and he told me he never heard anything like this, but it sounds right, so I'll tell it to you. And that is that the kidneys can't be worse than actual 5 grains. Meaning, like, if there's no need to have a chumrah on kidneys that we don't have in the 5 grains. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with eating a piece of wheat, correct? There's nothing wrong. We eat matzah, we eat wheat. There's nothing wrong with eating a piece of corn. If you know for sure it hasn't touched, it has to come in contact with water. In other words, the only way, we're machmir, that the kidneys is like the 5 grains. 5 grains are only usser if they've been soaked in water for 18 minutes. So it would be logical to say that the kidneys are only usser if they've come into contact with water. If they've never come into contact with water, so then probably an Ashkenazi can take a piece of corn and eat it. So beans you put in water, rice you put in water, all of these things you put, fenugreek you put in water. A lot of things, even if you don't put it in water, they've been put in water for you because they're washed in the factories.
Barley's
been washed, seriously washed. But if you would have barley, theoretically, which has never come in contact with water, it's very possible. It's been washed. It says right on it, rinsed, washed. It says on it, it's clean. So barley is, but if you would have actual barley, for sure barley, if you'd have it, well, barley hanagitol is an actual one of the, you know, wheat barley, that's a real grain. Right, so that's chametz gomer. But you can eat a piece of barley. You can have barley matzahs. There's nothing wrong with eating barley matzahs. The barley that you put in your chalent has been washed. Flour is mutter. Actual flour. You go out and buy a bag of flour. Nothing wrong with it, not chametz. The only reason why flour is considered chametz is because in the factory they wash it. That's why it looks so beautiful. It's not that the flour, even whole wheat flour they wash. So it's been in contact with water. So flour is chametz because it's been in contact with water. It's not chametz because it's wheat, because wheat is what you make matzahs are made out of flour. That's exactly how they make matzahs, out of flour. So it can't be that it's usher. But I'll tell you what I mean by this. Like, let's say... let's say you take, I'll give you an example, like corn, and you pop it. But not pop it the way we used to do it years ago by putting it in a pan with oil and mixing it around. But you put it into a thing that's just blowing air. You're taking actual corn, and you're blowing hot air into it, and poop, 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 and it becomes popcorn. Now, assuming that the corn has some kind of a heksher, like a Svardi heksher, and you're not adding any water to it, so I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think anybody would say there's anything wrong with it. It's just that I haven't seen anybody discuss it, so I'm afraid to say, but you heard it here.
Svardi heksher doesn't guarantee that it has been set in water.
Well, it doesn't have chametz in it.
Yeah.
Right, it doesn't guarantee that it doesn't have water in it, right. So if you can guarantee that there was no water in it, which probably is why nobody does any of these things.
Yeah.
So what is the story with quinoa?
Yeah, exactly.
Quinoa is not on the list, and therefore Moshe Feinstein today already, a long time ago there was a big tumult about it, but now the OU, the OK, the Star K, everybody says quinoa is OK.
You live here and all the packages say, hopefully quinoa is well back. Can you still rely on that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I believe so.
Wait, if you see quinoa...
Unless you've taken upon yourself all the minhagim of... I'm not talking about it.
Not eating quinoa, but I'm cooking for a whole crowd that
right.
does it.
Ramosha talks about potatoes. Reb David Feinstein talked about quinoa and said that Ramosha said it was okay. So I don't know how old quinoa is in our society, but Reb David Feinstein said it's okay. Ramosha says there are those that want to say that coffee is kidneyous, God forbid. And all spices. All,
it's
not kidneyous. Right.
Okay.
It's not kidneyous.
So
just how long my son? No, but it's a bean. It's dry. It's a good proof. But I mean, you put water.
Why? Yeah, you cook it.
You cook it. Cook the coffee bean, right? But Ramosha says not kidneyous.
Why is coffee?
Don't know. I don't want to talk about it.
The punchline on quinoa is just halachalamaisa. It's only going to say kosher la'okhlei kidneys in Israel, but it's not actually kidneys even though the package says it.
I would eat it. If my wife permits it, I would eat it. If it's 100% kosher la'pesach, I would eat it. Or Moshe says it's okay, it's okay.
Wait,
what's
it like canola oil?
Canola oil also. This whole idea of a mashu doesn't apply to kidneys. It only applies to real chametz. And the Sfardim are just as worried about chametz as we are. So it was a question of a mashu. There would have to be a kazayas. There would, it's not an issue.
But check the rice 3 times.
Bakasha.
So shouldn't we check the quinoa as well?
Look, you have to do whatever you have to do to make sure it's not chametz. That's a different story. Like they talk about, they talk about a lot of the mutter.
If you recall, there was someone in our family once found a barley. There was barley inside quinoa. That. Mm-hmm.
But the stuff that's.
I don't recall, but I can.
Does not have chametz. It's just that they have a mesorah checking it. Sfardim check the rice because there's a mesorah to check the rice 3 times.
Because
the stuff
it comes
to
count.
The hafshar on it is not going to have chametz in that.
I would hope not. It also comes from a long time ago. Today factories are very isolated. They're not using the same machinery like they did. But you have to know. Look, if you want to use, here's my advice. If you want to be machmer, which is good. If you want to use something, just check the source of it. Quinoa, in essence, is a kosher l'Pesach product. It's certainly not chametz, and it's not kidneys either. Do they make it on the same kalim that they make chametz? If they do, then don't use it. But if you see a hechsher, a good Sephardi hechsher, it would seem to me that means that there's no chametz in it. Cottonseed oil apparently is made with chametz. That's what they say. I'm not that familiar with it, but I just happened to see today that the CRC at Chicago, they said that every time they investigate into cottonseed oil, they find problems. Made on the same equipment as chametz stuff.
So why in Flitzlars is it OUP on all these
products? I don't know. They themselves are arguing about it, so I don't know. So I don't know. So there's enough. I'm letting you use enough stuff, so don't you? No, everybody already agreed that quinoa is okay. Everybody agreed in America. Whole America. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about Chashuva Poskim and Rav Heinemann. They also say, by the way, that just while we're there, they say that cocoa is also a bean, but it's not a kidneyous. It's not on the list. You see, I don't know what
it says. I'm not trying to be
No, I don't know if what Chazal called beans and what we call beans, or sometimes they're seeds, sometimes, there's a lot of different things. So it's not so simple that, like, every bean. But cocoa's clear. Cocoa's clear, so, and the...
things that you need to survive.
The coffee. Hershey's, I read today that Hershey's 100% cocoa is kosher lepesach, without any hechsher on it at all.
Really?
Yeah, without any hechsher at all. This is the things, if you look at the list of what doesn't need any hechsher at all, it's Hershey's, not other brands, but Hershey's 100% cocoa is 100% kosher lepesach. Extra virgin olive oil is 100% kosher lepesach. Non-iodized salt, the iodization process can be a chametz process, but if it's non-iodized salt, doesn't need any hechsher at all. The plain white cane sugar does not need a hechsher. If you're sure it's plain white cane sugar, it's probably good to have a hechsher because they are allowed to mix a certain amount of corn sugar into it, so it might be kidneyous. But if you know for sure that it's cane sugar, it's mutter. And there's lists and lists of in America, there's lists and lists of companies that make sugar that you're allowed to domino sugar. For instance, Kosher Lepesach is an example. The cheaper brands, they put beet sugar and they put this kind of sugar. That kind of, it's not cane sugar. Most, like artificial sweeteners, are kidneyous. And again, the poskim are worried that even I would have thought that it's a yotze min hakidneyus, so it could be okay, but there's something about it which they don't like. Milk. Let me tell you about milk. Milk, the Shulchan Aruch says that if a cow was milked on Pesach, he shouldn't drink the milk because it's all surrounded by wheat. And even the cow eats wheat, it could even go into the milk. So you shouldn't eat drink milk on Pesach. So all milk that you find on Pesach, which is kosher, means that it's milk that was bought before Pesach. If you think that you're going out on Chol HaMoed and you're buying fresh milk, you're not.
It
says Erev Pesach right on. Yeah, it says Erev Pesach right on.
What about meat?
Even America, I used to give hashgacha on kosher Pesach milk. Most of the hashgacha was, there was two parts to it. One part was to make sure that it only had a label to make sure it was made before Pesach. And the other thing that I don't know that they do here is in America they put in vitamin D into the milk, and vitamin D is a wheat derivative. So that's, vitamin D is actually chametz. But here I don't think they put vitamin D in. They rely on the sun. And No. I mean, you have to check it. You have to check every part of it. Now, let me just... I'm out of time. I didn't get into the kashering, so what should I do? Let me say one more important halacha, and I'll decide in a minute whether I'm going to get into the kashering or else we'll just do it privately. But it's up to you. Really, it's up to you. I'm okay. There's a very, very important caveat in chametz, and that is that it has to be edible. Now, who's eating something that's not edible? All of us. Every time you take a supplement, you're eating something which is not edible. Every time you take an aspirin, you're eating something which is not edible. Every time you wash your hair, you're washing your hair possibly with chametz, which is not edible. So the halacha is very clear. It's a mishnah. And the Mishnah says that if something became inedible before Pesach, so it lost its name of chametz. It's not called chametz. And it won't come back. It's not going to become chametz again. So once something, this is a very important thing, because once something becomes a chemical, you know, like they take food and they make it into a chemical, citric acid. So once it becomes a chemical, you can't eat it in its raw form. You die. You can't eat it. It's too concentrated. It's too strong. It's too heavy. So once it becomes a chemical, it's inedible. And once it becomes inedible, I'll give you a perfect example. Alcohol, there's three kinds of alcohols that you'll see on a bottle. One of them is E-alcohol or ethyl alcohol. Another one is isopropyl alcohol, which is often says on the shampoo, I-alcohol. And the third one is D-N-alcohol, denatured alcohol. E-alcohol, whenever you see that, it means that it's made out of wheat. It's chametz. So you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. But if you're not eating it, because it's not edible, so what are you, not, nobody's eating shampoo. If you're not eating it, once it's become inedible, then it's lost its name of chametz. I'll give you some clear examples of this in a second. On the other hand, isopropyl alcohol is petroleum-based. No issue at all. So if you look at a bottle of shampoo or soap or whatever it is that you're into, like whatever alcohol you like, if it's rubbing alcohol, it's not chametz. DN, denatured alcohol, another interesting process, that's alcohol, which is a wheat derivative, that's ethyl alcohol, which was denatured, meaning they made it poison. Why they do it is in the chemical process. It's denatured alcohol. They're obligated to write it, so nobody should think it's, you know, the guy in the Bowery shouldn't go and drink it. Oh, it's alcohol. It's denatured alcohol. No, he's reading the DN. Oh, I can't drink. He's not going to drink the denatured alcohol. So denatured alcohol is a perfect case of not roi l'achila. Now, I have in front of me a page from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he says, because of this that I just told you, the following things he writes are mutter. Any sabon l'nikui kalim, any dishwashing soap, is inedible. Now, it's not poison. If it was poison, you wouldn't be able to wash your dishes with it. But it's not edible. You can't take a drink, you know, l'chaim, of dishwashing soap. There are, by the way, some very, very, like I saw it once in a health food store, there are some that's actually edible. They're worried about any kind of chemicals. But your typical stuff that you buy is okay. Trufois bepesach, Ramosha writes, bidvar arafua, shatatzarech likach gam bepesach, somebody had to take pills on Pesach, and the binder that was holding the pill together was chametz. He said the binder is not an edible item. That's what Ramosha said. Therefore, it's mutter. Marichas mishcha shemu'ur b'chametz l'rape psoim, ointment that you put on your hand or on a wound. You have sunburn, you put something on it. None of that, he says, can be chametz. Kivan she'enoi maichol adam mutter behana. This is the key thing. Since it's not something you can eat, it's not forbidden to derive benefit from it either. In other words, there's no iser hana from something which there's no iser achila on. You following me on this? It has to start with a prohibition to eat. If there's a prohibition to eat, it's also usser to derive benefit from it. Once it lost its name food, it lost the shame Michael, so now there's no Isser Achila. Once there's no Isser Achila, there can't be an Isser Hana either. Or for that matter, there can't be an Isser Abayur Abayimatsa, so you're allowed to own it also, so you don't have to sell it with the chametz. There's no such thing.
So the second Isser is contingent on the first one?
The second and third Isser is contingent on the first one. The first thing is Lysaicha. You know why? Because it doesn't say in the Torah that you're not allowed to derive benefit from chametz. It just says you're not allowed to eat it three times. So echad l'iser achila, echad l'iser hana, echad l'iser b'yirah b'yimatzi. So the whole thing comes from achila. So comes from Moshe. He says this is his list. I was reading. I have it even in Hebrew. I'll tell you something. I used to, one of the organizations in America. Prince, I don't remember which one. Prince of the List, like a big, like a little phone book of medicines.
Rabbi Bess.
After Blumenkranz.
Rabbi Bess.
So Rabbi Bess, California, right? So I people, like, there's a Rabbi Vishal, and people would call me this one. I take that medicine, my heart, my this one. And I realized in the middle of the whole thing over here, I said, this is like ridiculous. Why am I looking up this person's heart medicine? I don't think his heart medicine is going to die. No, it's not on the list. Maybe a different brand. You know, it didn't make any sense to me. So I called Rabbi Bess, and I asked him, like, why is this list? For what is this list? Why should heart medicine or diabetes medicine or kidney medicine or whatever medicine? You're talking about chronic illnesses. I'm not talking about a vitamin pill now. Vitamin pills, I understand. But why are these things even on the list? So he said, that's true. That's what he told me.
So
Enochanami, that was his words. Enochanami. So why is there a list?
Well, because it seems that it doesn't say that the actual medicines are all okay. It seems that it's the medicine that's in a box, the Mokhi Chomets.
I don't know what you mean. No, they're talking about which binders are Chomets and which binders are not Chomets.
So what about the actual medicine?
Medicine's never Chomets.
CRC says all those
are right. So today, I don't even know if he makes that list anymore. It started off, I think, with nutrients and with vitamins, and which most of them are like gluten free and wheat free. In any case, but that's a different schmooze here. But the list is almost like anybody who needs to take medicine should take medicine. And here's Ramosha Feinstein says, this was Ramosha that I based my telephone question on. Ramosha Feinstein says that it's everybody should take their medicine. Just take your medicine. Don't stop. Nobody should stop taking medicine because of Pesach. Now, just to finish off the thoughts, let's say you're talking about vitamins, supplements. So those things, so there's certainly no pikuach nefesh. It's not really a health. I mean, it's a health issue, but usually it's staying healthy. It's not about curing an illness. So there, Ramosha says also, a little bit further down in the tshuva, but it's not food. Unless you can chew on it and eat it, it's not food. So if it has, like, the kids' medicines, it's sometimes food, because they have to make it food because the kid chews on it. Or if you have medicine, they have, by the way, heart medicines, which you chew on, it's like gum. So that's food. Or somebody just showed me today, he's trying to stop smoking, so he has nicotine gum. It's chametz. That's not medicine. That's food. So all those things are also, but a medicine or a pill which you can't chew on and you can't eat cannot be chametz because it's not called an ochel. Tell me, it's 10 o'clock, I want to stop, but tell me if I'm happy to give another shiur on kashering the kitchen for Pesach if people want to come.
Yes.
Okay. Is next Wednesday night too late?
Yes.
Is that good?
Yes.
Okay. Tomorrow, you tell me, tomorrow night?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Sunday. What's Sunday? Sunday night? Sunday night? Okay. Thursday night?
Thursday.
Is somebody here want to take a vote?
Thursday night?
What are we, what are you?
No, Wednesday night. Morning. Conflict. Something with
Thursday night, please
raise your hands.
Thursday night?
That's
good. Okay, so we'll do the what? Yeah. You mean just do it from my house? Okay. Anyways, Thursday night I'll confirm it by an email. Okay.
Right,
it has a hefsher?
Yeah, it's but like cottonseed oil also has a hefsher.
No, look, if it has one of the main hefsherim, so it's good. That means they checked it. Nobody says that it's all not good. They just say a lot of times.
No, but here
they don't let. Because it comes from China, so they can't check.
Oh, okay.